Greetings and welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church on Kirkpatrick Road in Burlington, North Carolina. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. If you'd like to correspond with Pastor Barkman and the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. The Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. Now with today's message from God's Word, here is Pastor Greg Barkman.
In Romans chapter 7, verses 7, 8, and 9, God, through the Apostle Paul, gives us three purposes for the law. And the reason this question has arisen, namely, what is the purpose of the law, is because Paul was teaching that salvation doesn't come through the law. Justification is not by law-keeping. It is not by works. It is rather by grace through faith. And when Paul taught this, there were people who objected and said, no, the way of salvation is to keep the law of God. And if that's not true, if what you're saying is true, then what purpose does the law serve? God gave the law. God obviously intended the law to be an instrument of salvation for those who will keep his law. And so Paul has extensively demonstrated that salvation is not by the law, but that still leaves lingering the question, well, then why did God give the law? And so Paul gives three reasons in these three verses, and they are, number one, the law defines sin, verse 7. Number two, the law provokes sin, verse 8. And number three, the law convicts of sin, verse 9. And first of all, he tells us that God gave the law in order to define sin. The law defines sin. The law tells us exactly what sin is. And here's how he put it in Romans 7:7. What shall we say then? Is the law sin? Certainly not. On the contrary, I would not have known sin except through the law. For I would not have known covetousness unless the law had said, "You shall not covet." And so there is an emphatic exclamation to this hypothetical question that others have been raising against Paul, namely, is the law sin? If the law can't save, then what is it? If God didn't give the law for salvation, if God gave the law in the Old Covenant has now been set aside in the New Covenant, doesn't that make the law a mistake? Doesn't that make the law an error? Doesn't that mean that God has recognized the weakness of the law and said, all right, I'm sorry, I didn't do too well with plan A, let's do plan B, and then sent Christ. But, of course, with God, there is no plan B. There's only plan A, God's perfect plan all the way through from beginning to end. But the problem, of course, is that men oftentimes, in fact, I would say always times, do not understand God's plan. And so, is the law sin? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. If that's what you think I'm saying, says Paul, then you have misunderstood my teaching. Absolutely not. Is the law sin? No. God forbid. But, the law does have a relationship with sin. The law itself is not sin. But the law does have a very important purpose that relates to sin. The longer I pastor, the more obvious it becomes to me that oftentimes people do not hear what I say. They hear something, and they tell me later sometimes what they think they heard me say, and so many times it is not what I said at all. And that is often the case, both in public proclamation as well as even in private conversation. And there are all kinds of reasons for this, which I will not go into now. It seems to me that people who have a heart to hear what is said pretty well, and those who have a bone to pick generally have difficulty understanding. and generally misconstrue what has been said. I've seen that over and over. It's interesting to see people who have a real controversy get it worked out, and how oftentimes they exclaim about how much better the preaching is, how much better the preacher is than before. And in their minds, what's happened is that God has graciously done a work in the preacher's heart, and now he's preaching clearly. Now he's preaching effectively. Now he's preaching helpfully. And before he was not. I just couldn't get anything out of it. Now I am. Did it ever occur to you that the preacher really hasn't changed? I'd like to think that I'm getting better and better and better as I go along, and it would be wonderful to think that God, in his grace, reaches down and helps me mightily and powerfully to make giant strides forward in my ability to preach and teach and in the effectiveness of my communication. But the fact of the matter is that after 32 years of pastoring, my preaching really doesn't change that much. I'm always trying to do better. Somebody asked me one time, what's the best sermon you ever preached? And I said, my next one. I'm never fully satisfied with any sermon that I preached, and I always hope to do better on my next one. My next one is going to be my best one, because I'm always hoping to improve, and I hope and I think in some ways am improving. Surely experience ought to count for something. Surely growing in grace and knowledge ought to count for something, but it's a gradual matter. It's not an abrupt change, as some people seem to think it is. Oh, what a wonderful change. Hasn't it ever occurred to you that the change has taken place in your heart? That before, you were in no spiritual condition to benefit from the preaching, and now God has done a work in your heart and changed your attitudes, and suddenly everything is wonderful, when before everything was wrong. That's great when that happens, and that does happen from time to time. It's also sad to see the reverse happen, as we do see from time to time, people who have been exclaiming about how wonderful the preaching is, how beneficial, how helpful, just exactly what they needed, the best preaching they've ever been able to sit under in all of their lives, and then a problem arises, and suddenly they're not getting any help here anymore. They're going to have to find someplace else. They just can't get anything out of the messages. Did it ever occur to you that the problem is not with the preacher, as they almost always say it is? Something's happened to you. You've changed. No, probably not. It's not that it's impossible, but probably not. Probably the change has occurred in your own heart, in your own attitudes, in your own ability to be to receive and to be helped. You need to understand that. You need to understand something of the workings of the human heart. And recognize that when you're not benefiting from a ministry that you benefited mightily from at a previous time, that the problem is not likely with the preacher. The problem is likely with you. Why don't you consider that? Not only as a possibility, but as the probability, and ask the Lord to help you and to find out what's wrong and to address it and correct it by the help and grace of God. So the critics of Paul is preaching that God's law was all a big mistake. No, that's not what Paul was saying. You're misunderstanding what Paul is saying. Your critical spirit is making it impossible for you to hear what the Apostle Paul actually says. So now listen up. Listen up to what Paul is saying about the law. What shall we say then? Is the law sin? Certainly not. On the contrary, I would not have known sin except through the law. I would not have known sin except through the law. The law, you see, defines sin. It tells us the exact boundaries of sin. It tells us what is and is not sin. And Paul says, I would not have understood sin except through the law. Well, I might have had some general hazy knowledge, some general hazy concept might be a better way of saying it, because knowledge probably isn't the right word. I might have had some general hazy notion that there is such a thing as sin, but to really be able to understand it and define it and say this is and this is not a sin, there's no way that I could have done that except by the law. And then Paul gives a personal example. He doesn't leave it in the general principle, but he gives a personal example. The general principle is, I would not have known sin except through the law. Now here's the personal example. For, I would not have known covetousness except the law had said, thou shalt not covet. I had not known covetousness. I had not known sinful desire. That's what covetousness is. I would not have known illicit desire, evil desire. I would not have known that coveting my neighbor's house or wife or servants or farm or tools was sin, except the law said, thou shalt not covet. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's ox. Thou shalt not covet anything that is thy neighbor's. Now, how would we have known that that was sin, except the law said so? We might have had an understanding that stealing my neighbor's ox is sin, or taking my neighbor's wife is sin, but simply the desire in my heart to glance over the fence at my neighbor's farm and have this desire, I wish I had what he has, I wish I had that ox, I wish I had that tractor, I wish I had that car, I wish I had that house, I wish I had that neighbor, I wish I had that neighbor's wife, I wish I had that swimming pool, I wish I had that SUV, I wish I had that RV, I wish I had, and oh boy, it just goes on and on and on and on, doesn't it? But we are inclined to think that the things that only occur in our mind, in our heart, and aren't actually acted out by what we do are not sin. That's just a thought. A thought isn't a sin. Well, the Bible says it is. And it's even chiseled out in the Ten Commandments. On those Ten Commandments which God wrote with his own finger in the tablets of stone. And there it says, thou shalt not covet. And Paul says, if the law had not said, thou shalt not covet, I would not have known that covetousness was sin. It's interesting that in citing his illustration of how the law defines sin, Paul does cite the Tenth Commandment, not one of the earlier ones. But it is true, Paul was a rabbi, of course, and we know from literature that the rabbi sometimes considered the Tenth Commandment as a summary of them all. That's the reason why you do the others. It's covetousness that causes you to steal. It's covetousness that causes you to commit adultery and so forth. And you can actually link all of them to that if you will think about it long enough. But what Paul is saying is, this is the one that God used to convict me of sin. In other words, Paul lived a pretty upright life outwardly. He didn't steal. He didn't commit adultery. He didn't lie. He could have been very self-righteous. But he did covet, didn't he? Yes, he coveted, because his sinful heart caused him to desire that which did not belong to him, that which belonged to his neighbor, and it was the law that showed him that his covetous heart was indeed sin before God. The law defines sin. Until tomorrow, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you his eternal peace.